You're listening to the RightStream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at RightStream and hashtag RightStream. Thanks for listening to the RightStream Radio Network.
Welcome to the Speculative Fiction Cantina with your host, S. Evan Townsend.
And good afternoon. I am S. Evan Townsend. Welcome to the Speculative Fiction Cantina, your weekly hypodermic injection of science fiction, fantasy, horror, alternate history, and all things weird and wonderful in the world of books and writers. I am S. Evan Townsend, and I have 5 published science fiction and fantasy novels. If you want to learn more about me, you can go to my website, which is www.sevantownsend.com. S. Evan Townsend is all one word. That's www, of course, sevantownsend.com. Today on the Speculative Fiction Cantina, I am very happy to have as our guest Francis Pauly. Hello, Francis.
Hello.
How are you today?
Wonderful. Glad to be here.
Great. Glad to have you here. So tell us about what you write, Frances.
Well, I write speculative fiction, both fantasy and science fiction, sort of across the board and usually with traces at the very least of romance.
Romance. Okay, that's very cool. So do you have a favorite science fiction or fantasy or do you not, is it like your children, you can't pick a favorite?
I have a horrible time picking a favorite. I've always read both and written both sort of naturally, and I can't tell you how many times people have asked me that question. I can't choose.
Yeah, I have the same problem. And I consider myself primarily a science fiction writer, but of my 5 books, 4 of them are fantasies. So. So why a touch of romance?
You know, I guess it comes from my reading roots again. I used to read just a smattering every once in a while of romance, and it crept in. The series that I'm writing now, and when I write fantasy, it tends to lean towards fairy tale genres, and there's always just that trace of romantic subplot or romantic themes that I'm exploring in the genre.
Cool. Very interesting. I have to be honest, I've never read a romance novel. But, you have a lot of books out. I don't know. I tried to figure out how many books you had out, but you have a few books out. You're a hybrid writer. You do both indie and publishing houses, correct?
Yeah. I do small press, electronic press, and then I have a couple of series that I publish indie on my own.
Cool. So one of your latest novels is Shrouded. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. That's the first book in the Princes of the Shroud series. It's published by Zarme Press, and it is science fiction with, again, a really strong romantic subplot. Each of the books is going to follow a different member of this ruling council of the planet Shroud as they meet and chase after and end up with their romantic love interest through the story. And you know, the backdrop to that, of course, is planetary invasion and galactic unrest and all of the great science fiction elements that you can weave alongside that.
And I had the privilege of reading the one that's coming out soon called Seeing.
Book two, yes.
That was a very good book with a touch of romance. And then you have a book, and I love the cover of this book because it's this big blue dragon, Kondalis. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm. Kondalis, well, right, is the series name. It's Storm Dragon is the first book.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right.
So tell us about Storm Dragon.
This is a urban fantasy / humor chick lit fantasy about a woman who is incredibly skeptical and is dragged to a psychic fair in Seattle by her roommate. And a side effect of her having some Reiki treatment and some metaphysical contact is that she awakens her Kundalis, which is a normally invisible dragon that only she can see and that takes great pleasure in sort of messing up her life from that point on.
The word Kundalis, is that something, did you make that up or is that a real word?
It's a modification of Kundalini, which is in Hindu, I believe, mythology. Kundalini energy is pictured as a serpent that winds up your spinal cord. And so when you reach enlightenment, the serpent breaks free of the body. And that's where I got the idea for these giant serpent, dragons that represented a person's energy when it got out of control.
And then
her goal,
of course,
is to bring it back under control.
And a lot of that all takes place in Washington State, I understand.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Central Washington, Clee Ellum area.
Oh, okay. I know that because I heard you read from it. Okay. And then Kingdom's Gone is another recent book you had come out, correct?
Right. That's my indie series. The Kingdom's Gone series, and there's three books out right now. The first book, Unlikely, is permafree at the moment, hopefully permanently permafree, and the other two are available, and then book four is going to be up on pre-order within the week, hopefully releasing at Christmas.
Great. Our other guest, Fran Orenstein, I hope I pronounced that right, I think she's on the line.
I am on the line. I'm so sorry.
Fran, you are here.
I am here. Every clock in the house is different.
<laughs> I'm sorry. Now, they say a man with a watch knows what time it is. A man with two watches never knows what time it is.
Exactly.
So, well, thank you for joining us, Fran. Did I pronounce your name right? Orenstein?
Orenstein is fine. Thank you.
Orenstein is fine. Again, thank you for joining us. We've just been spending some time with Frances. So Fran, tell us, you seem to be an eclectic writer. Tell us about what you write.
Well, I write for all ages except very little kids. I write for kids, tweens, teens, and adults. I also write in a multitude of genres. I write poetry and short stories.
That's very impressive. Do you have a favorite genre or age to write for?
I do like to write for middle grade and young YA. I enjoy that age group. I enjoy writing for that age group because they're very open to reading. They're open to their reading experiences. They haven't yet gotten set into a particular genre or something that they will only read like many adults do. So I like that because I write eclectic books and stories, and so I enjoy hoping that I will get some kid interested in a different genre.
Or just get them interested in reading and get them out from the in front of the TV and the video game box.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us about your book. Called Book of Mysteries. I think that's a YA book, correct?
It's an older tween, young YA. I'm kind of setting up my own age group. 10 or 11 to 15.
Okay.
Because now they've split the YA to younger YA and older YA. Now they've got the 17 to 25 age group called the new YA. So my books kind of span it, depending upon the reading level of the child. The Book of Mysteries is a trilogy of three fantasy adventure novels, and it's in one volume. It was originally written as two separate stories, and then when I wrote the third story, I found, well, I was already publishing with World Castle Publishing, and Karen agreed to put it all into one volume and publish it as a three separate novels. And each one has its own cover, and it's separated, but it's in the same, they're in the same book, and they're fun.
Go ahead, what are they about?
Well, yeah, they're the characters are two boys who live in an apartment house in New York City, in Manhattan. And they come from interesting families, and they are one of the boys, the main character, and then his friend goes with him, is sent by his eccentric uncle to find a disappearing bookstore in Manhattan and to find a certain book called The Book of Mysteries, where they can then go on adventures through The Book of Mysteries. But they end up finding this very odd, mysterious, magical bookseller, the bookstore, when it's there.
I was going to say, disappearing bookstores is not fantasy. That's the reality, but...
Yeah, unfortunately, but this isn't that kind of a disappearing bookstore.
Oh, okay.
It comes back again.
Oh, right. Great. You have a book called Gaia's Gift. I saw it's labeled as women's literature, but does it have paranormal elements to it?
Yes, most of my books do. I enjoy that. The only book that doesn't is the contemporary adult mystery, the Murder in Duplicate, but all the rest of the books have paranormal elements. I like doing that. It's just something I've always enjoyed reading, and so I incorporate that. And Gaia's Gift is a contemporary woman's novel set in Tampa Bay, and it's about a woman who loses everything in her life and then makes a decision that changes everything, and then learns that sometimes the decisions we make have very different results from what we expect.
That is very true. And I was looking, this caught my eye, the name made me laugh, Fat Girls from Outer Space.
Yes, and that's, I'm very excited about that. That book I wrote a long time ago. It's a story of it's a emerging adolescence story. So it's for tweens ages say 10 or 11 to 14. It's basically a girl's book, but boys really experience the same thing. They just don't talk about it. And in this case, the girl just happens to be obese, but it could be anything. Too thin, too fat, too tall, too short. My hair's no good. My face is ugly. My teeth stick out. You know, whatever. You choose it. Because everybody goes through that at adolescence. And Freddie has a self-image problem, and she's being bullied at school by a particular boy and his little gang. It is a story of entering seventh grade, dealing with changing friendships, with growing interest in opposite sex, with the bullying and how she deals with it, and new friends she meets, and basically how you can learn to overcome everything using your talents and gifts that you've gotten, that you have, that can override the bad things going on in your life. But what's exciting is I have a new publisher who found me out here down here in Phoenix, or east of you. I don't know where you want to say it, but in Phoenix. She publishes only children's books, and she is republishing Fat Girls, which is expected to come out in the next 2 or 3 weeks. It will be out as a regular novel, and then it will be out as an e-book, and it is now being done as a graphic novel. So I am extremely excited. It's going to be a very beautiful graphic novel.
Well, that sounds great. Thank you for sharing that. Frances, what would you consider your last book? Would that be
my latest
book?
Was
yeah,
Storm Dragon.
Yeah,
Storm Dragon.
What inspired you to write that book?
Oh, I was coming back from Seattle from a science fiction convention, and we stopped in a rest stop near Clealum, and there was a vehicle next to us that had they had two black cats, and it was just one of those surreal moments. One cat had on this red bandana, and the other one had a little pink bow on, and I just sort of wove this one particular scene around those cats, and they end up making repeated appearances in the series now. They've grown and grown into something much larger than just that sort of flash.
Just a cat that walked by.
It was the weird cats, yeah.
The weird cats. It's always fascinating what inspires novels. Fran, what inspired your most recent novel?
The Death in D Minor. Is that the one?
Sure, go with that.
Which one are we talking about? The Book of Mysteries?
Or, D Minor. Yeah.
I mean, to pick one of the 11 books. I don't know which one to tell you. The Book of Mysteries, what inspired it? I wrote it a very long time ago, and what inspired it was the fact that I love writing fantasy, because you can use your imagination and do anything, and you can say anything, and you can put them anywhere. So I love it because it's so creative. And I simply came up with this idea. I get ideas that they just, it's like epiphanies. They pop into my head. I don't even think about it. And then I sit down and the words just flow out. So it's not sometimes things like Fat Girls, you know, is inspired by my own experiences as a child. But but the Book of Mysteries is just my love of writing fantasy.
Yeah, what I love about fantasy is you can make your own rules, of course. And I sent all my fantasies in the past, and I had to make them historically semi-accurate.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I made my own rules, and then I confined myself. So, Frances, why did you start writing? How long have you been writing, and why did you start writing?
Oh, I think I've been writing forever. you ask any author that, and they're like, it's hard to remember when you first decided that you had aspirations to write. I wrote a lot of bad,
12.
Bad fiction and terrible poetry in high school. And I always wanted to be a writer, but I never managed to finish anything. I wrote a lot of beginnings. Until I was in my mid-30s. I think I was 31 when I finally sat down, and I just happened to be in a position where I wasn't working, and I was comfortable enough that I could continue to not work, and decided I was going to finish one thing and hammered out an entire novel. And, of course, once you finish and realize you can, then it gets very addictive.
Yes, it does. Yeah, people ask me when I started writing. I say, when I was 12. And probably wasn't
right.
A very good writer then, but you know, I've learned. You know, we learn by doing. Fran, when did you start writing, and what inspired you to write?
Okay, I was 8 years old. I wrote my first poem, and I've always written poetry. I read Bambi, and I fell in love with the book, and then I continued and read the next two books from the series. But I wrote a poem about Bambi because I was so moved by it. I didn't stop crying through the whole book. And I wrote a poem about it. And my mother, who, thank God, was a saver of everything I ever did in my entire life, saved it all. And I have everything I wrote as a child. And I used to write these little tiny stories, and they'd be maybe 3-inch by 3-inch, and I'd make little books that I stapled together. And I have all of it, and I was astounded to find it. I mean, I've moved so many times, and finally, I unearthed it in one box, and I wrote a short story at 12, which I sent away to a magazine, and that, of course, went nowhere when you're 12 years old. But I've always written. I always wrote poetry. I always wrote short stories, and I wrote professionally, and I wrote academically. So it wasn't until I retired that I actually started writing novels, because then I had the time.
Mm-hmm.
put all the ideas accumulated together.
Yeah. So Fran, what you say you always written? What do you love about writing?
I think I like the creativity. I mean, I've tried art, and had I followed up and studied, I might have been okay as an artist. I've been playing music, you know, doing music since I'm seven. I've never mastered anything. I mean, I can play, but, you know, piano, and I've played other instruments, and I used to sing when I was a child, but writing has always just been something that came very natural to me. It just, as I said, it pours out of me. It's like something gets inside my head, and the words just flow right out.
You're the only other writer I've talked to who writes like me. You know, it just comes out. I sit down and it comes out.
It just pours out, yes.
It just pours
out.
In fact,
I don't often rewrite a lot of stuff that I do because it comes out the first time. I edit as I write. That's just the way I do it. I'm not the kind of person that can put everything down at once and then go back and rewrite.
Yeah, talk to 10 different writers and you'll get 10 different writing methods.
Yes.
Frances, what do you love about writing?
Oh, so much of the same thing. It's like you have permission to daydream professionally. and I've always been a bit of a daydreamer, you know. And I did also have a background in visual arts. And as much as I love painting, I found when I did it every day, or when I was required to do it every day, I came to really loathe it. And I can attest to the fact that if I don't get to write every day, it really bothers me. So,
it's funny. A day without writing is just strange. You feel like you haven't had your whole day yet. Even if you
it
just
really
write
becomes
a blog
a compulsion.
Post or something. Yeah, right. Yeah. So, Frances, what do you hate about writing?
Oh, my goodness, what do I hate about writing? Not having enough time to write all the time. Not being able to get, you know, it exactly the way you see it in your head on paper. That's always the goal, you know, is to reproduce the image in your mind. It's very similar to painting, and trying to capture that as succinctly and clearly as possible for the reader is always a challenge. But that, you know, that's part of the fun too. So,
yeah, I used to try drawing, and I'd have this picture in my head, and I'd draw it, and it'd be an army truck. No matter what was in my head, it came out as an army truck.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah, because they're easy to draw, I guess. Fran, what do you hate about writing?
I hate the fact that I don't have enough time to write. I've spent more time marketing. Mm-hmm. And right now, truthfully, I'm juggling three books with three different publishers. And how do I don't have time. Well, one wants a photo, one wants the back of the book redone. One wants the dedications. It's like it never stops. And then marketing. You know, marketing alone just takes hours and hours to get online and market your books. And then this is the season in Arizona for all of the events and shows. So I find every weekend that's what I'm doing. So I don't have a lot of time to write. Once I get in the zone, then I'm fine. You know, I can just write. But it's being able to get up in the morning and say, I'm going to write today. Well, I'm not going to write today because first I have to do this, that, and then other things. Because I owe somebody something.
So it seems like for both of you, what you hate about writing is not being able to write.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Frances, do you have a special place where you write, the place to get away, or something that puts you in the writing mode, or ritual of some sort? Like some people have to wear the right T-shirt in order to write. Do you have anything like that?
That sounds wonderful. I also have two small children, and I homeschool. So, I've had to, from day one, learn to write sort of amid the chaos. And most all of my books have been written at my kitchen table,
wow.
You know, between everything else. But boy, that sounds really nice.
That's impressive. when I wrote one of my novels, Rock Killer, I was living in a small apartment in Seattle, and the first Gulf War was on, and so CNN was on while I was writing that novel. I'll watch the TV for a little bit and I'll write, and I'll watch the TV for a little bit and I'll write.
I always want to say that I listen to classical music, you know, and have wonderful mood and surroundings, and usually it's Dora in the background and children's programming and a lot of screaming, so.
Yeah, you forgot the glass of white wine.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to hate me, Francis.
Go ahead, Fran.
She's going to hate me when I say how I write. Well, you know, I went through those years of three kids and the dogs and the cats and the every animal under the sun and all that chaos. And now that I am retired and older, I live in a two-bedroom apartment and I have my own office and total silence. And I have a cat who likes to sit on the side of my desk with me at the computer. And that's very soothing. She can be annoying, but she's also very soothing. And it's just time. I have nothing that's going to get in my way if I do it. I mean,
that's,
nothing physical is going to get in my way.
That is the dream. Yeah. So, Fran, what's your writing? Well, you said you just sit down and write. So you call yourself a pantser, or you know, you don't plot things out and plan them out. You just
no, I do not. Down. I am. I get an idea. I think about the idea. I write down the idea and flesh it out slightly, maybe two paragraphs, and then I develop my characters and I keep a whiteboard next to my desk. And on the whiteboard, I put down all the information about the characters. I like character-driven books. I like to read character-driven books because there's only so many ways you can do a plot. But characters, people are just, I mean, you can do whatever you want with people, and people are so unusual and different. So I plot out characters, and I add characters, and I subtract characters, and that's why I like the whiteboard, because I can just erase it or add something to it. And then I just sit down, and my stories seem just to flow, and they never go where I originally thought. They always end up someplace else, so I do not visualize the endings, because it will never happen. It's simply the way my mind works.
I often visualize the ending, but then I end up somewhere else at the end.
Like, yeah, that's right.
I'll be here, but then I end up over there. Francis, how about you? Are you a plotter, a pantser, a hybrid?
Well, I'm a reformed pantser. I used to do everything sort of seat of the pants, and I've been degraded to a certain level of pre-planning. Although I don't outline, I can't imagine working from an outline or knowing exactly where it's going. But I do usually line out my major plot points and some, you know, key scenes, and then as guideposts when I start writing, and then I aim for that. And of course, all sorts of wonderful surprises happen that twist you in a different direction. But
yeah, I don't know how people who outline have twists in their novels, because to me, twists in my novels are I'm running along and all of a sudden I have an idea. Ooh, let's throw this monkey wrench in. You know, but maybe they do that while they're outlining. I don't know. I'm an unreformed pantser, to be honest. Go ahead.
Some people need the discipline of the outline, which is very helpful to them. Everybody's mind works differently. You know, some people need that discipline, so they head in the right direction.
Right. Yeah. So they don't wander and just continue to wander. Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And wandering is something you got to watch out for. We'll be right back with our guests, Francis Pauly and Fran Orenstein, after this.
This is the Speculative Fiction Cantina on Rightstream Radio.
Tuesday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Rightstream Radio Network, Tune in to host Daria Ann for Writestream Tuesday. Daria Ann interviews talented authors in a variety of literary genres, from urban fantasy and historical romance to autobiography and science fiction. Writestream Tuesday celebrates the creativity that flows through every author. It also delves into the all-important publishing and marketing aspects of writing, including the benefits and pitfalls of independent publishing versus traditional publishing, and how to effectively use social media for success. Writestream Tuesday with Daria Ann, Tuesday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Writestream Radio Network.
You're listening to the Speculative Fiction Cantina on Writestream Radio.
And welcome back. We have our guests today, Fran Orenstein and Francis Pauly. I'm S. Evan Townsend. And I want to talk about a difficult subject for writers, and that's writer's block. Fran, how do you overcome writer's block, or does it just flow out and you never have that problem?
Oh, right, yeah. I wish. Sometimes I find if I go back and read either the whole thing from the beginning or the previous couple of chapters, I can move on. But sometimes it's this book that I'm writing now, well, one of the four books I'm writing now, but the one I'm concentrating on, has caused me a lot of problems, and I could not come up with anywhere to go. And I just left it, and I did everything else under the sun except write. I didn't write. And then I just had an epiphany. It was like all of a sudden, I don't know how it happened, I saw how the book had to go. And so I was able to continue moving it along. But usually I find if I go back and re-edit, I can move on. This was an unusual situation where I just could not see where to go with the book.
Now, I want that writer's block for 2 years, but that was a special situation. Yeah. Frances, how do you deal with writer's block?
I think she made a really good point. Usually when I believe I'm having writer's block, it's because I've made a misstep or lost the path at some point or done something that was out of character. And if I just back it up a little bit and try to find that, you know, the flow will shut down as sort of a warning sign that I'm not necessarily on the right track anymore. So if I can see clearly enough to go back and find what's causing the problem, then it's fairly easily fixed. But if not, you know, what Fran said is genius, to just step away and do something else until, you know, the light comes on. Luckily, at this point, I haven't had that happen very often.
Yeah, how often does the light come on in the shower? That seems to be what always comes on for me. So I'm sitting there, I'm showering, I go, oh, that's what I should need to do. Yes. Yeah, that's why
I'm talking about the shower.
It's close by the shower, but it's not actually the shower.
Oh, okay. We won't go further there. When I had writer's block for 2 years, I finally figured out it was because the climax I had planned for my novel sucked.
You don't plan.
Yeah. Yeah. When I figured that out, I said, hey, this sucks. Let's do something different. And it ended up being a great climax. And that was my novel, Hammer of Thor. So, Fran, do you have something to read for us today?
I do. I'm going to read from the first book. It's called The Revenge of the Wizard. And this, I'm going to open with Chapter 3 because you already know the boys are in New York City and they've been sent to this disappearing bookstore. As soon as he stepped off the bus, Tyler knew this was a big mistake. Black clouds threatened overhead. Cold fingers of electric-tinged air tickled the back of his neck. He shuddered and rubbed his skin as he waited for Zach to catch up. They walked north, then turned the corner. The bookstore was visible. Tyler shook his head. That was stupid. A store was either there or not there. It didn't just come and go whenever it felt like it. From where he stood, he could see the wooden sign swinging in the increasing wind. Beetlesbury's Rare Books. An eerie glow spread beneath the dark clouds. Thunder rumbled in the distance. Zach poked a finger in his back. "I guess that's the bookstore," Tyler jumped. Zach laughed. "Sorry, I didn't mean to scare you." Tyler said, "You didn't scare me." He looked back the way they had come. There was still time to change his mind. "Maybe we should come back Monday after school." "No way," Zach said, taking off down the street. Then Tyler clenched his fists and hurried after him. It was always easier to be brave with your best friend. Maybe they could still beat the storm if the book he wanted was on the shelf. The boys stopped short in front of the shop. A hand-lettered sign hung in the glass-fronted door. "We close for storms." The lights were out inside the shop. Tyler cupped his hands along his face and peered in the window. He couldn't see anything in the blackness. Suddenly a candle flickered and a white oval appeared an inch from his eyes. Tyler jumped back, the beat of a bass guitar thumping in his chest. "Did you see that?" he yelled. An entire heavy metal rock band was where his heart should have been. The banging rose to his head and down to his toes. "See what?" Zach asked, putting his face against the door. A crack of thunder masked the click of the door. A claw snaked out and snared his wrist, pulling him through the doorway. Zach yelped, struggling to free his wrist. Another cold claw pulled Tyler inside, and the door slammed shut behind them. "Relax, young masters. I won't eat you. Already had my lunch. Besides, I don't favor eating 12-year-old boys. Too tough. Girls, now, a little sweeter. Yet sometimes they're tough, too. But stewed well with mushrooms and onion, girl stew might be tasty." The voice cackled and ended in a coughing fit. The pressure on his wrist lifted, and Tyler backed up, hitting the door and rattling the glass. He couldn't breathe. "Hey there, are you all right? I surely didn't mean to scare you like that, Tyler," the dark figure said. The candle moved closer, and a bony old man, dressed entirely in black, came into focus behind the flickering light. Tyler pressed harder into the glass door. He still couldn't breathe, but his head bobbed up and down. The old man's eyes glowed like black marbles in the firelight, and his white hair fell down around his shoulders. "Good!" The old man's lips curled up under his jagged, pointy nose, one side of his mouth higher than the other. "I wouldn't want to lose the only customers of the day. Just let me get some more light in here. Have to watch the candles. Books burn, you know," he laughed, his voice cracking. Tyler could hear Zach breathing hard behind him. He could see the room now. Bookcases soared to the ceiling. Piles of books covered every available surface. He sneezed. "Ah, good, you're breathing again, Tyler." The old man was standing behind him. Tyler whirled around. "How did you know my name?" The old man pointed a bony finger at his jacket. "Said so right there in big white letters, Tyler. So unless you stole it, that's your name." Tyler glanced down at his name. Okay, but it only made sense if the old man could see in the dark. Better not ask that question. Then the old man turned to Zach. "You, Zachary, are you breathing too?" Zach's voice squeaked. "I'm not wearing a jacket. How could you know my name?" The old man just tapped his head. "So brave, lad. You came here for the book." Tyler frowned. Did the old man say the book, like he knew what book they wanted? "How do you know where anything is? Nothing's marked," Tyler asked. The old man grinned, a lopsided grin of brown, crooked teeth. "Good question, smart young man. I know where everything is." Then he pointed, spinning around. "Nature, spells, mysteries, adventure, witchcraft, plays, poetry, travel, magic." He stopped in front of a high bookcase. "This is what you came here to find." He stood on his tiptoes and reached up, pulling down a thin, brown book. "Take it, smart young man. Don't be shy." Thunder rolled overhead, and the first drops of rain splattered the window. Tyler reached out for the book. It vibrated in his hand, and he almost dropped it. "Careful now, young Tyler Trent. You don't want to drop that book." Tyler remembered his uncle's warning to stay on the good side of the book. He couldn't believe he just thought of that. A book was just paper and ink. Just to be sure, he carefully turned the book over and held it near the candle. Fat gold letters said, "The Book of Mysteries." A large golden brown eye stared out from the cover. He turned to the old man. "Who are you? How could you know what book I was looking for? And how did you know my last name? It's not on my jacket. And how did you know Zach's name? How do you know how old we are? I've never met you before. I've never even been in this store." The old man grinned crookedly. "You ask too many questions, nosy boy. I know lots of things, young Tyler. It's my job to know. I'm the keeper of the books, Bartholomew B. Beetlesbury, bookseller and know-it-all, at your service." He bowed stiffly. Stop.
Oh, I was so enthralled with that.
Do you want me to keep going?
No. Well, yeah, that's what we probably shouldn't have you keep going. I love the description of the storm when he gets off the bus and I can't remember exactly how he did it, but the electricity and the clouds, and I could just picture that. It was great. Thank you for reading that and sharing that with us. Frances, did you bring something to read today?
I did, but I'm gun-shy after that.
Oh,
it was wonderful.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Oh, it's all right. I have Unlikely today, which is the first book in the Kingdom's Gone trilogy or series. And I was going to read an excerpt from chapter 18.
Mm-hmm.
She climbed the great stair on legs that shook and threatened to give her away. The stones themselves held, as they had through the ages, stout and unrelenting. Still, the absence of walls to either side slowed her steps, even though each stair stretched easily the length of a man in either direction. The gentry had run this gauntlet, streaking like crazed demons to the diving platform. Satina climbed one terrified step at a time toward the narrow landing. It had been 3 days. As she neared the halfway mark, Vane's stretched voice reached her. "Can you see it?" Satina scooted toward the stair edge, and her stomach clenched. She leaned out just enough to see him standing in the middle of his crater. He held his necklace out and turned this way and that, testing it for warmth, looking for magic. "Satina, can you see anything?" They hadn't found so much as a broken pot, and she'd been hard-pressed to keep him digging at the spot for 3 days. As it was, he'd split the men off into smaller teams, reworking the outer digs, the ones that continued to turn up the occasional relic. Now he had a small cart full of dishes, scraps of tapestry, and silver along with the remains of an unfortunate servant. But he had no magic. "I'm not sure," she shouted down at him. She'd felt a surge of power only moments before, and Vane had scrambled in answer to the revelation. He had his necklace out, and she had his full attention. "I think it's a little to the right." Vane pivoted to the right and held out his device. Even at this height, she could tell he was scowling. "Good." As it happened, his finding nothing at all fit right into her plan. Before he could order her down, before she could lose her nerve, she ducked back to the stair's middle and continued her climb. To either side, she saw treetops. In one direction lay the other stair, the little one beside the road where she'd begun this journey. In the opposite, Hodge's cottage waited, warm and surrounded by sweet, calming herbs. Behind her, through a narrow swath of forest, the town of Westwood waited. Martin waited. They all waited for her to fall. She reached the top before her thoughts could stop her. The next step would put everything in motion. She peered out over the courtyard. The next step went nowhere. Far below, Vane spun his misunderstanding in an arc, looking for magic that wasn't there. Between them, a narrow strip of air shimmered and hinted at the pocket beyond. Had they pulled the cart back into position? A breeze that had felt light and friendly closer to the ground whipped at her hair and cloak, tugging her in the wrong direction, the safe direction back down the stairway. Had this really been her idea? "Satina!" She leaned out. The courtyard made a pattern from up here. She could see the slight shades of gray, the way the stones fit together. The digs marred it, but it was there, a soft herringbone of hewn rock. It would hurt if she missed the pocket. If the wagon wasn't back in position, the fall would kill her. "I see it," she hollered down at him, but the wind tore her words away. He frowned, his hand pointing at the necklace. Satina shook her head. She threw one arm out and fixed her gaze on the pocket. The gentry had done it. They'd done it at a run, like children at the bank of a creek, gleefully, with no fear. But they'd know where the wagon was. "There," she pointed down and wavered on the lip of the landing. Vane's eyes flew wide. He shouted her name, screamed for his men. Satina let her arms flail, waved them through the air as if she struggled for balance. She bent her knees, and the wind snagged her cloak and whipped it high behind her, like wings. She leapt into the air and fell.
Okay. I hope she gets...
I missed the beginning. Is this a YA?
It's a fairy tale fantasy, but yeah, the age range is around YA.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's good.
That's very good. I hope she hit the portal, did you call it?
The pocket, yes.
Pocket, yes. Oh, yeah. And you left us a cliffhanger, literally. As she falls. Fran, other than writing, what inspires you?
Other than writing? Oh, music. I used to play recorder. I play piano. I used to play recorder, which I haven't played in a while, but I play Native American flute. I used to play guitar, but arthritis got me. I used to drum, but arthritis got my hands too. So it's a lot of things. But I love music. I used to sing a lot, and when I was younger. So music inspires me. Nature inspires me. I absolutely love nature. I love water, water features, and the ocean, and those are inspirations. And that's why a lot of my my books are based on nature, Gaia particularly, you know, Mother Earth and saving the Earth and ecology and so on, are very big for me.
Very good. Frances, other than writing, what inspires you?
Other than writing, music and dance and movies. I'm a huge movie buff.
Is that it?
That's my short answer. No. I love music and dance, and I think it's sort of a universal thing that the creative arts kind of dovetail beautifully. So I spent 4 years in visual arts school, and I dance, and I play a little ukulele, and I've hung out with puppeteers before, and all of the creative arts tend to feed off of each other.
It's always interesting to talk to writers because they almost always have some other creative outlet other than just writing. I can't say that, but most other writers you talk to will have other creative outlets. They'll draw, they'll paint, they'll sing, they'll play with puppets. They'll have something. I just drive fast and try to avoid getting tickets.
Well, you know what's interesting? I bet both of you like to read.
Very
writers
much so.
Have to be readers.
Yes, you have to. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which is another form of inspiration.
Yep.
I
love that. Yeah, and it was funny when I first started reading Robert Heinlein in my 20s, and even then I wanted to be a writer, even though I was in the military at the time. And I thought it would be intimidating because, you know, he was like the dean of science fiction, and so I started reading Robert Heinlein. And it wasn't intimidating. It was inspiring. It's like, wow, this is great. I can aspire to achieve, you know, some of this greatness maybe. It was amazing. Fran, are you planning on participating in NaNoWriMo. You know what NaNoWriMo is?
No, I don't. But I don't know what it is. So.
Oh, that's National Novel Writing Month, and it's a thing where you're challenged to write a 50,000-word novel or 50,000 words in a novel.
Oh, yes, that one, yes. It's got a lot of names. No, because at the moment I've got four novels going at the same time, so I don't think I'm doing a NaNo novel.
How about you, Francis? Are you going to do a NaNoWriMo novel?
I am, although I'm cheating this year. I'm doing a series of novellas, probably four or five novellas in November. I am a regional municipal liaison for our area, so I pretty much have to participate in NaNoWriMo. And I actually, you know, I owe a lot of my novels to the event. It's a great way to light that fire under your, you know, your fingers and make sure you get the books done.
And force yourself to write. And force
exactly.
yourself to get the words out. Yeah, that's you know, one of my favorite things to tell people is just keep writing. That's usually how I overcome writer's block, is I just keep writing. I might write crap for a couple of pages, but, you know, I can go back and erase that. And that's, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm doing NaNoWriMo too this year, and that's what I'm thinking. I'll get the least part of a novel out of it. You know, 50,000 words is a short novel, but it's a doable length. Although 50,000, I don't know why they chose November, because first of all, it's a 30-day month, and it's got a major holiday in the middle of, well, not the middle, at the end of it, you know. So you only get like 28 days to write, and you know, and you got to write almost 1,700 words a day, which,
and it's also a month everybody has company and has all these things going on and
exactly.
doing shopping and everything under the sun. So
they should do it in August, because nothing happens in August.
Oddly enough, they have a camp event. They have two every year, one in March, I believe, and one in July. And I've done all of them, and I'm far more likely to finish my 50,000 words in November. I almost always have just too much going on in the summer month and the spring month for some reason. I think I've only ever completed one of the camps, but I always manage to pull off 50 in November.
Wow.
Sort of an odd phenomenon.
Yeah. Well, the first time I did NaNoWriMo, I did finish my book in November because I got to about the middle of it and I realized I needed a bunch of research to finish the novel. And I spent a bunch of time doing the research. And I did finish the novel, but it was like February. And the second time I did NaNoWriMo, I did finish my novel. And that was a good feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So this Thursday, I don't know if either of you are aware of this, on the 24th in the afternoon, there's going to be a partial solar eclipse in the afternoon. And it's going to be visible in most of North America. Far east northern Canada is going to be, the suns are going to be down, so it's going to be cold and dark. But it's always cold and dark there. So, and this is from space.com, and the link is on my blog at blog.s7townsend.com. And they're saying that the safest way to view this eclipse, and this is going to, the sun is going to go behind the moon partially, not totally. And the further north you are, the more it's going to go behind the moon. They said the safest way, I thought this was a cool idea, to view the eclipse is to put a pinhole in a piece of cardstock or stiff paper and tape it to a west-facing window. And then it's like a camera obscura. The eclipse will be projected on the opposite wall.
Oh.
And if your opposite wall is cluttered or busy or something, you could just hold up a piece of paper a few feet away from that, and you can see the eclipse. You never, ever, 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 ever want to look directly into the sun because it hurts your eyes. And if you look at the sun with binoculars or telescopes, you will go blind. So don't ever, ever do that. If you're interested, there's a link on my blog, the link for this episode of the Speculative Fiction Cantina at the bottom. And in that story, there's a link to a map where the eclipse will be visible. And unfortunately, the times are in Greenwich Mean Time, so you have to figure out what time they're talking about. You know, depending on where you are, how many hours off your Greenwich Mean Time. And they call it UC, which is Universal Coordinated Time.
Well, you managed to put in the Ukraine for this Blog Talk radio show, so I'm sure you can figure it out.
Yeah, I was in the military. I was in military intelligence, and we dealt with time zones constantly, because you'd be in such a place, and something would be happening in such a place, and you'd be telling somebody in another place about it. Yeah, it was. I got very good at time zones when I was in the military. So, Francis, do you have a favorite place to just relax?
To just relax, Hawaii. If I can pick anywhere, it's Hawaii. I discovered I really love snorkeling. I think it's my favorite sport.
Oh,
unfortunately,
yeah,
I've only been there twice. You know, I like to be outside. I think it's a great way to recharge the batteries and the creativity. Anywhere in nature that's quiet.
Do you live in Hawaii?
No. Wouldn't that be nice?
I don't know, because I do know an author who lives in Hawaii.
That would be nice. People do live there. There's a million people on Oahu, according to the movie I watched last night. Yeah. I went to Hawaii a long time ago, and I went to Honolulu and went to the beach. Well, one nice beach, got two blocks from the beach, and you're in downtown L.A. Yeah, that just doesn't really matter.
Honolulu
Hawaii.
Is very congested, yeah.
Yeah, Kauai is a beautiful island. They call it Garden Island, and that's for a reason. Fran, do you have a favorite place to relax?
I like to, if I can't be outdoors, because it's hot in Arizona, at least if I can look out a window at the outdoors. And what's nice in my office is I've got these lovely little trees outside my window. They pretty much block a lot, and I really look at those trees. But it's true, nature, anything in nature. But truthfully, anywhere I can curl up with a book, because I'm an avid reader. I read 3-4 books a week.
Wow.
So anywhere I can read a book is my place in heaven.
That's great.
It's my
problem with... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, my problem with the outdoors is the outdoors to me is sunburns and allergies. So,
well, bug bites. Bugs love me.
Bug bites, yeah. I'm not an outdoorsy kind of guy at all. And when I was in the military, they made us be outdoors a lot. And that was a challenge for me. Any hobbies or interests outside writing, Fran?
Me?
Yeah.
Fran? Oh, Fran, reading.
Yes.
Reading is, I love gardening. I love to get my hands in the soil. I don't have gardens anymore, but I do have pots of flowers. Lots of plants. Pots of plants. Not pot plants. Plants in pots.
Well, that's okay in Washington State and Colorado now, but yeah, not in Arizona. Okay. How about you, Francis? Any other than writing and reading, any interests or hobbies?
Other than writing and reading, movies, I crochet quite a bit. I've been known to try to make wine on occasion. I did a stint in school when I gave up painting where I studied fiber arts. So playing with yarn, weaving, crocheting calms me down.
Interesting. Okay. Is there anything else either one of you want to – we're getting low on time, but is there anything you want to add, Fran?
My website is www.franorenstein.com. There's a lot to learn on there. I've all about my books and my interests and hobbies and all kinds of interesting information. I have I've lived a long time, so I have an extensive biography.
Yeah, and the link to your website is on my blog. If you go to my blog, blog.s7townsend.com, there's links to my website too. There's links to Fran's website, there's links to Francis's website, there's links to some of the books we've talked about today, and there's link to the Eclipse story I talked about. Francis, anything you want to add?
Aside from my link, which you've kindly pointed them towards, I have a couple of releases coming up. The second book in the Princess of the Shroud series, which we were talking about earlier, is due out this winter, as well as my historical paranormal romance series, book two, Demon Dogs, is coming out from Mundania Press. And other than that, the first book in the Kingdom's Gone series, the one I read from Unlikely, is free currently at most retailers. So it's a good way to get an introduction to what I do and what I write.
Oh, I forgot one thing. Can I add a book coming out?
Sure.
I have a short story anthology that finally found a publisher here, or the publisher found me. It's called Ans Macabre, and it's a paranormal thriller, ghost, vampire, you name it, is in there. And it's I think there's a dozen short stories in the book, and I'm excited about that coming out, as well as Fat Girls from Outer Space. And I am waiting for World Castle Publishing to put out the second in the kids series, the Amber series about a little girl who wants to get rid of her stepmother and everything she tries, her future stepmother and everything she tries backfires. So this is Amber and the Magic Whipped Cream Dress, so you can imagine what stage we have gotten to in this storyline. So I'm waiting. It's in the queue for editing. We have a lovely cover.
The first book in that series is One Amber Too Many, if I remember right.
Yes. Very good memory.
Okay. Well, it helps when you write to remember things. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around Fat Girls from Outer Space. I guess the girls aren't really from outer space.
No, that's the name of their band.
Oh, okay.
And it's Freddie believes that that fat people were put on Earth from the planet Gigantus to teach people on Earth how to be nice and respect and not be nasty to people who are different from themselves. So they named the band Fat Girls from Outer Space.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you both. Thank you, Fran, and thank you, Francis. And I'm going to hit my producer, which is me, for booking a Fran and a Francis on the same show. I think that didn't occur to me until...
I'm a Francis, too.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you went by Fran, because otherwise it'd be like Francis 1 and Francis 2. You know, thing 1 and thing 2 or something like that. But thank you both for being here. I loved your readings. I loved spending this time with you. I've learned a lot. I've about both of you. And if you're listening and you want to learn more about them, go to their websites. And like I said, their websites are linked on my blog at blog.s7townsend.com. Goodbye, Fran. Goodbye, Francis.
Goodbye. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been the Speculative Fiction Cantina on Right Stream Radio.